What's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of the Earbuds Podcast. This is a podcast where two good buds talk about one good album for a good amount of time. Today is a little different. We decided we're bringing back guests in 2024.
Finally! And
I am very proud to announce the first guest we've brought back this year is a man I've known a good amount of my life. Who's always been majority. There for me. Yeah. It's my dad.
Yeah.
Hello. Hey. Papa Hanrahan.
Yep.
Danny, super psyched to have you on the show, man. Duh. So excited.
This was Lucas's idea, and I was, you know, I don't know. I was excited to bring you on just because you are pretty much the soul. You're kind of you got me into music, listening to you know, Rush early on, Linkin Park.
Mm-hmm.
And Van Halen, which is, this is an album we've been meaning to talk about since we started the show.
Awesome.
And glad to have you on.
Big album for me. Yeah. So I'm kind of the right person to have on who isn't in the biz. just a huge fan of Eddie. As you know, back in the day, he's the reason I picked the guitar up and learn how to play. And because of this album, the other band was the Eagles, which is an interesting kind of range.
Yeah.
But I can go into that story later. But yeah, this is a huge album for me. And, you know, I was just listening to it the last couple of days just to refamiliarize myself with the songs. And man, it still holds up. It's still rocking.
That's what I think. It's one of the, I don't know, you know, time passes on. It's one of the few albums from like this era of music that I still enjoy listening to pretty regularly.
Yeah, you know, a song pops on the radio every now and then and you hear it, but you know, of course we all have our streaming sources these days that can listen to as much of it as we want. And when I was doing that, I was really interested in what songs really spoke to me again. And what songs really stood out from the memories I have of first listening to this just game changer, I'm going to call it. Because,
yeah,
you know, and I'll just go ahead and dive in real quick just to set it up a little bit in context of this album.
Yeah.
It came out. Yeah. Think of the time this thing came out, right? I was 14.
And 78, it was, I believe.
70. Yeah. It came out and it was released in April of 78.
Perfect and age, at that 14 time, for this record.
Oh man, it was. Well, the story goes, I'll tell you in a second, but you know, I think it's important in context because the music that was out around that time, if you look at it, you're talking about Saturday Night Fever time, right? You're talking about Blondie and Funkadelic, and you know, there were a few rock bands who were coming out at that time. The Police, released Alanis Morissette. The Clash had some stuff out there. The Talking Heads, Cheap Trick.
Yeah, I was going to say Cheap Trick. Like
Foreigner. Yeah.
Yeah. There was AC/DC.
But man, like, as a 14-year-old, I'm dying for something that really spoke to me. And, you know, Van Halen came out in a barrage, right? The story goes, it's a true story. And I'm still friends with this guy, by the way, many, many, many years ago. But I was riding my bike to my best friend at the time. His name was Bill Kruger. He lived in condominiums, and I was riding my bike to his house. And picture, if you will, these condos, and they've got the windows or screen windows in the front. And a guy had these two humongous speakers. It must have been 2.5-3 feet tall, pointed out his front into his front yard. And the very first thing I remember hearing, in fact, he literally knocked me off my bike, was the blaring horns at the beginning of that album.
Running with the Devil?
The, yeah. And I literally jumped off my bike and I was like, what am I hearing? Is it? I didn't know if it was Police. I had no idea what was going on. And then all of a sudden, they hit that bass line and then a guitar kicks in. And that was the beginning of the end. It was over from that point on. And then the next song I heard was Eruption, and then, you know, on and on and on. But I remember that to this day, all these years after, I remember that, because very few albums upon first listen had that sort of impact that this album had. It literally knocked me off my bike.
Well, crazy. Yeah, I read on the Wikipedia that this was a big influence to ongoing like metal that would define the 80s. And it's so weird to think of this music as metal in the modern era, I guess.
Yeah, I was trying to contextualize like what this album meant, because for me, Van Halen is such a different thing. You know, like I was born in 87. I think by that point, like, wasn't Sammy Hagar already singing for them?
Probably. Yeah.
Right. So like, to me, Van Halen was always just this kind of like older band. I never really gave them much attention or anything. But when I was listening to this, I was like, wait a second. And I looked when it came out, and it came out in 1978. So 45 years ago. Am I right? No, more than that. Yeah.
Well, I'm not good at math, but I'm going to believe you. It's a long time ago. Yeah.
Probably. Shit. I think it was like 45 years ago, but I was trying to think, I'm like, what other bands in 1978 even sounded like this? Because to me, Van Halen was always a hair metal band, kind of like Motley Crue. I always put them in the same category as Motley Crue and Guns N' Roses and, you know, like Iron Maiden and stuff like that. But like, this album came out 2 years before the first Iron Maiden record. It came out 2 years before the Def Leppard debut album, 3 years before the first Motley Crue record, and 10 years before Appetite for Destruction. So I was like, but all of those are related artists to Van Halen on Spotify. And I'm like, did Van Halen daddy all these groups? Like, did they birth all these groups? Were they the first one?
I think they were. I mean, again, there were a select few bands out there who you might want to call rock, you know, but they were like the hardest core rock band out there. You might have said was The Clash, and they weren't even, that was a few albums before they were even a deal. Right. And then you got like, again, like Talking Heads and Cheap Trick. Sabbath was old. Yeah. Sabbath had then Led Zeppelin, you know, of course, Led Zeppelin had been around. Yeah. So they were there, and Led Zeppelin had some albums. But you know, the funny part about Led Zeppelin was I wasn't really into them. I was more into other bands, but I later appreciated Led Zeppelin, probably because of Van Halen and the things that they were. In fact, the funny story about that I read recently, catching up with this album, is that, you know, Eddie, if you go on YouTube, you could find it. He never claimed to do the tapping, hammer-ons, and pull-offs that he does. He claims I never said I invented that, but he learned how to do that by going to a Led Zeppelin concert. He had seen Jimmy Page do his one-handed hand up in the air while he was playing the guitar.
Yeah.
And he was just doing it, you know, and he goes, wow. And then he started doing it himself. And that led to him actually doing his own version of it, which is, you know, obviously infamous nowadays. And, you know, Eddie was my guy. I used to have a strap on my guitar with his pictures of him and buttons on it. And I always try to emulate him. And, you know, I joke that he was the single source of joy and heartbreak as a guitar player. Because, yeah, I mean, as much as I loved him and everything he did, I loved, I knew I would never be able to play like that.
He's been a singular talent, which even looking past their musical influence, nobody plays like Eddie, and nobody played like Eddie, certainly. And it's not even a hot take to say it's the core of the band is Eddie's playing.
Yeah.
And Eddie, how
Eddie's like, David Lee Roth is just there to be a front man and do, you know, to have a fun vocalist to kind of like elevate the music a little bit. But like, Eddie is Eddie's the star of the band.
He is.
If Eruption is not enough of an indication that like Eddie is meant to be the star of the band.
Absolutely. You know? There's a interesting story on, you know, you mentioned Sammy Hagar earlier. You can look this up on YouTube too. And they were Sammy Hagar and Michael Anthony, who was the bass player originally for Van Halen. And I can't remember the drummer's name, but the guitarist for this band, I think they're called Chickenfoot.
Was
Joe Satriani,
Chad Smith,
they were on Howard Stern, and you know, I consider Joe Satriani probably one of the most technically gifted guitar players ever, and he was having a problem playing Eddie's stuff. So when a guy like that, like they asked him, they said, what, Howard Stern asked Sammy Hagar, what is the most crazy out there song that Eddie ever played? And he said, the beginning of Mean Streets. I know this was on Van Halen's debut album, but he said, Joe, can you try to play that? And as good as Joe Satriani is, he just couldn't play it like Eddie.
Really, Joe Satriani is such a great direct comparison to someone like Eddie Van Halen, because it's like Van Halen, Joe Satriani, and Steve Vai, I feel like, are all kind of in the same like prodigy type category. Mm-hmm. But yeah. I think the huge difference, like, I've never been into Steve Vai or Joe Satriani, even though, like, as a guitarist also, I'm like, mm-hmm. you know, holy shit, you guys are amazing. But mm-hmm. there was, I think the difference between those two guys and Van Halen is that, like, Eddie has all the technical chops, but he adds like a swing and a groove to everything that he's doing that does not feel like robotic, how Steve Vai or Satriani can sound. So I'm just like, you listen to Van Halen, he's more talented than those guys, arguably, not just mm-hmm. like from a technical standpoint, but also he can write a catchy ass song and play this like blistering solos, these like technical classical guitar solos on an electric distorted guitar. And you can accept it. And I feel like that's what I'm wondering, like, back then in 78, like, okay, allow me to go off on a little tangent real quick.
Yeah.
Okay. So, like, we, you know, we already talked about like Rush, AC/DC, Cheap Trick, mm-hmm. all that stuff. I'm just like, listening to this album, immediately I thought, okay, so Van Halen was the first hair metal band, kind of, right? Like the first party rock hair metal band. Mm-hmm. I almost feel bad calling them hair metal because it seems like reductive, but it's like they're always considered.
I get it.
I get what you're saying.
But like, and all those bands, you know, Guns N' Roses, Motley Crue, I consider them their contemporaries, but, you know, like, and I thought they all kind of came out around the same time, but knowing that this came out so much earlier, it makes me feel like, is Van Halen a way bigger deal than I ever gave them credit for, really? Because to me, they were always kind of this like goofy, fun rock band, but I'm like, wait a second, they kind of changed like rock music in the face of, and like, they made it popular again from mm-hmm. like party rock or something. So like, I feel like the biggest, as a guitarist, I know the biggest impact from Van Halen is Eddie, just like his guitar playing and his techniques and how much he completely changed the game. It's like, I played Eruption, the first 20 seconds of Eruption, like 100 times at Guitar Center. Like, I was that kid and I was so proud of being able to just do like 10 seconds of the hammer on pull off thing. Mm-hmm. But I was always kind of like, and You Really Got Me was one of the first like two or three songs I learned on guitar. But I was always kind of dismissive of Van Halen, and I always saw David Lee Roth as kind of like a goober, you know, goofy guy. Never really took him that seriously. I always hated his voice. Their music videos were just like four white dudes just like having fun and smiling a lot, and I never really like got that vibe either. But after getting into this, I was like, was Van Halen a game changer when they came out? And like, you have solidified that, like, you have answered that question for me already. And then, like, looking at Wikipedia, you know, they're credited with like restoring rock music to the forefront of the music scene or whatever. But I think the this guy from AllMusic, I pulled this from Wikipedia, but his name's Stephen Erlewine. I feel like he said, able to like say what I was thinking. And he described this album as like monumental and seismic. I don't know if you mentioned, we're talking about the Van Halen record, Ash. Did you even
mention that? I forgot to say that we're talking about Van Halen's debut record, Van Halen, self-titled.
So the Steven says that this album, yes, is monumental and seismic, and it's not usually viewed as like this huge generational shift as much as maybe the first Led Zeppelin record or the first Ramones album or something. But he did say that the amazing thing about this record is that it sounds like it has no fathers. And I
feel
like that was such a great way to put it. And it's like, it's so original. It doesn't seem to belong. It doesn't sound like anything that came before it.
No.
Mm-mm. But it sounds like nothing else. And despite so many like decades of people copying this sound. And it's just, that's why I was just like, I feel like Van Halen like fathered.
It was a whole new raw.
Yeah.
I mean, again, you know, from my vantage point, being an old dude, you know, what are the songs were out at that time? The Car Is Just What I Needed, Beast of Burden by the Rolling Stones, you know, The Who had Who Are You. Rock, yes, but this seemed to say, forget you guys, this is how it's going to happen from here on out. And it was just a shot of adrenaline. And it made so many, not just me, but it made so many of my friends stand up and take notice and go, I want to learn how to play guitar now. I mean, we had five or six of us that just picked it up because of this album. And I never pretended that I was ever going to play what he played, but I was so, I guess there are a lot of firsts for me with you know, getting back to Eddie a little bit, because he is the soul of the band, in my opinion. I agree with you on that. I think David Lee Roth was at the right place at the right time. I think Michael Anthony's underrated. I do. I think his brother's a good drummer.
I was giving Michael Anthony a hard time last week to Ash. I was like, man, easiest job in the world, running with the devil on the bass.
Yeah. You know, I mean, he's I think his claim to fame in the band though is his vocals.
Yeah, he's like, doing the backups that are.
He did a lot of backup vocals. About that.
Okay.
Yeah. But the first time I ever heard anybody do that level of hammer on and pull offs in context of making a song, not just for effect, but exactly, as part of the song, was mind blowing. He's so melodic. Even Joe Satriani said about Eddie, the best right hand in the business.
Yeah.
He was so incredible.
One of the reasons I really adore Eddie Van Halen and always kind of wanted to emulate, like, I could never emulate his guitar playing, but the thing I love most about him is that they don't need a rhythm guitarist, because he is the rhythm guitarist and the lead guitarist. They hardly need a bass. But
yeah, it's so incredible that you say that, because when I was listening to the album today, I actually wrote that down. And I don't know if you guys know this. Here's a little fact for you. If you listen to the original vinyl Van Halen, they record Eddie on two channels, rhythm separate and guitar on another channel. So you can literally pan back and forth and hear only his solo or hear only his rhythm guitar.
I noticed
it's
that.
It's mind blowing because when you, there's a song, let me look at my notes here, because I know it's one of the songs on the album that I wrote down specifically about this. And I think it's Feel Your Love Tonight, or one of my favorite ones, which is I'm the One, where they do it opposite. And you hear, and his rhythm is so incredible on that song. And you don't even really hear it unless you do that, unless you just go from one balance to the other, right? And even his solos, if you just listen to his solos, it's just like, this guy is just insane. So yeah, his rhythm is amazing. He was the first to tune down that I ever heard, because they're tuned down half a step. I never heard anybody do that before.
Interesting.
Most of their songs, right? He was the first to use every part of the guitar, right?
Oh, right. Yeah, he was like in the booping. In the beginning of Running with the Devil, it's like that's on top of the neck, yeah, or at the bridge, one of the two. And I'm like,
oh. Yeah. And back in the day, we didn't have YouTube, we didn't have video, we didn't have, we used to call it needle dropping. You had to pick the needle up, pick the needle up, pick the needle up. Even if you had a cassette player, it was really wonky. So a lot of times you go through albums and albums and albums because you just wear them out. And at the beginning of Atomic Punk, I never knew what that was. And then I found out later, after reading a magazine, that it was his palm of his hand against the top of the strings, the bridge of the guitar.
Yeah, it kind of sounds like a Tom Morello move with the scratchy.
Yeah. Dude, I'm telling you, man, listen, you hear this and you hear 30 years of rock music that came after it.
I know. Yeah. Tom Morello owes a lot of his stuff to Eddie. Yeah, absolutely. And he'll tell you 100%. That. Yeah, he'll tell you that. A lot of the guitar players do.
It's also that Eddie was making his own guitars, right?
And yeah, he had his infamous Frankenstrat. Yeah.
Right.
And I remember you Yeah, I don't. It was so cool to me when I found out that it was like a guitar he made, and he just knows everything that goes into it. But even past that, I remember you telling me a story about Ted Nugent.
Yeah,
if you could recall that for me.
I do. Yeah, it's a pretty infamous story, in that Ted Nugent was upset about Eddie because I think they had opened up for, or they had done one of those World Series of Rock they used to do back in the day in the big stadiums, right? And Ted Nugent tried to call out Eddie about, you've got some sort of pyrotechnics going on here. This is fake. You can't play like that. So he said, let me get your guitar, because he thought it was all in Eddie's Frankie, he called it. He thought it was all in his guitar. And Ted tried to play what he could play and he couldn't. But Eddie picked up Ted's guitar and played exactly like he played on Frankie. It's the person. And so that, to me, spoke volumes about. I have a funny story about Eddie. So I was so into him about all those things that you just talked about, right? Yeah. That I had read in like Circus or one of the rock magazines that you used to die to get, because you couldn't see, you didn't even know what these guys looked like for a long time, right? Because you just didn't have what we have today. Yeah. And I read that Eddie had boiled his strings in paraffin wax.
Oh,
paraffin wax is used to soften skin in salons. But back then I read it was about that surfers used to use it to wax their surfboards. And Eddie used to use it to loosen his strings. And so I literally took a set of strings. I found some paraffin wax and I boiled my strings in paraffin wax. You know what happened? They rusted immediately. I didn't do it right about it. They completely rusted. So the guy did stuff like that. He was a cutting edge guitar player who, like you said, Ash, knew everything about the, took the guitar apart, built his own pickups, built his own guitar, eventually built his own, label and brand, but knew how to work everything about the guitar, but he also knew how to really play it. He wasn't just messing around, right? He knew exactly what he was doing. And so he was the first to do all that too. So there's a lot of firsts with him in the band. You know, I can just say this about the band. They followed Eddie's lead and they were a tight enough band. You know, obviously we don't know the backstory that they were playing on a Hollywood strip for a long time. In fact, Van Halen, the debut album, only took 3 weeks to record.
Yeah, that blew my mind.
Well, they had been playing these songs live on a Hollywood strip for years. In fact, Ted Templeman, who's a producer of Van Halen, wasn't even going to have, or Eddie didn't want to have Eruption on the album. And Ted said, no, you've got to have this on the album, because he knew how big that part of the stage show was for people.
I bet.
And so Eddie had been playing that for a long time. That's why the recording of that album went so swiftly, is because I think it cost him $50,000 to make.
It's incredible. And I didn't know that they worked with Gene Simmons before that. They like recorded like a 3-song demo with him or something.
Yeah, there's a couple of stories that sort of conflict on Gene Simmons's part in all this. He had seen them live, and then he told them after Kiss had a tour. So he said, after Kiss had a tour, I'm going to come back and I'm going to introduce you to this record producer that I know. I didn't know if that was ever confirmed that he did it, but some stories would tell you that he did. And it eventually led to Ted Templeman, and eventually led to the recording of Van Halen. And, you know, I think rest is history. I don't know how long it took to make a huge impact, but I know that it went to like number 15 or 13. Rolling Stone ranks it in their top 500 albums of all time.
Yeah.
It's just everything about it. Again, I was just listening to it and I'm still blown away, but it's not even just Eddie and the guitar playing. It's little things like how he works all those elements into a song. Like we talked about Atomic Punk. We talked about, like, I was listening to another song on the album called I'm the One, and it's probably my second favorite. I have to rank them. I'd say that Atomic Punk was my first, because it's such a freaking cool song.
Yeah.
It's my least favorite song on the record.
Well,
yeah. That's you. What are you?
I'm sorry.
We could have completely opposites of songs we rank But the totality of the album obviously is pretty clear.
Oh, yeah.
I think from my perspective, what blew me away about that song was not only the intrigue behind, like, what's this weird noise he's making at the beginning of it, but there's a part in the song, and I wrote this down, at about 2 minutes, 11 seconds, where he hits two triplets, harmonics, within 2 seconds.
Yeah, I think I remember what you're talking about.
And I used to play that back and play that back and play that back and go, how did he just do that? Like, it's hard to play harmonics as it is, but he's
doing it
and it's part of the song. It's not like, oh, I'm going to show off and just make this happen. It leads you into another section of the, you know, song. And I'm the One, which is a fun one. He has four different guitar riffs before they even hit 30 seconds in.
But it does, it is all in service of the song. It's true. It's like none of it feels like any sort of like a braggadocious showing off, like, look how good I am. And anything.
It does,
like,
a little bit. It does a little bit.
I'll give that. I'll say that about Eruption. That's a little bit overindulgent.
You gotta let a guy flex every now and then, you know? Like, he's got,
and that was his flex. That was his flex for sure.
When you're as overpowered as Eddie is, I guess you gotta like tone it down a little.
I think something we haven't talked about when it comes to Eddie too, which, by the way, first, I love these little like factoids. It kind of makes you feel like this, some of this stuff is kind of, you, it makes me believe in destiny a little bit more when I read stuff like,
yeah,
Eddie didn't even want to play guitar at first. Like, he was a pianist, and then he wanted to play drums.
Yeah. If I could talk about that for a second, where his brother wanted to play guitar and he was playing drums, and then they switched. Eddie sounds like he's doing drum fills throughout all these songs.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That's what, like, that triplet harmonics reminds me of, is these little, the ends of these phrases, and he's doing like, you know, and it just reminds, perfect. it's how a drummer would play a guitar.
Well, coming from a drummer, that's amazing insight.
Yeah,
I could totally, now that you say that, I want to go back and listen to it again, because I think that's awesome.
And it would make sense why he has that technical prowess, but still can have a groove and a swing, because if he's approaching it from a drummer's perspective, it's like he's going to add that rhythm to it that it needs.
In going back to I'm the One, the insane riff that starts off the song, which is somehow extremely fast yet still swingy.
Yeah,
you know. And he's somehow doing like a shuffle on his picking hand, and it kind of reminds me
a little bit of like a Stevie Ray Vaughan vibe, where he's got that same sort of thing that he does, and Stevie's steeped in, you know, blues guitar as a background, but that swingy bluesy sort of element to Eddie's playing is definitely there if you really listen to it.
Absolutely.
For sure. Yeah, I feel like what really stood out to me, next to just, you know, him and his amazing guitar playing, what really stood out to me was his tone. That I feel like it was very different from a lot of guitar tones in this era.
And I read this, I don't believe it, because I couldn't even carry Eddie's E string, but what I do know about guitar kind of makes me think that maybe this isn't true, but he was quoted as saying he never used a distortion pedal.
Well, cause
get off it.
I know.
There's no way.
In the stories I read, he was introduced
to two different heads, a 57 or 5150 got its name from one of his amp heads. And he had two that he would, And I don't know the nuances around Brett or Ash, you'd probably know more about this than I do, about how it's set up to make those sound go back and forth to what it sound like it was distorted. Now, again, I can't claim that I know that for a fact, but that's what I heard and read. So I'm like, well, that's pretty crazy.
That's crazy.
Another thing that I think we shouldn't really miss out on as far as a band, because we talked about Eddie a lot. But
yeah,
there are harmonies in this album that nobody was doing back.
You know, that is my next favorite thing about this record, are the harmonies. I'm like, that is the next thing that I kind of glob onto. I love all the harmonies. I wish more rock bands still did that. Like, it's always cool. It always works for me.
It feels very reminiscent of like a 60s doo-wop group or something, right?
They have elements of that.
I was thinking one of these songs, it's like,
you're probably it made me think of
the Beach Boys at one point.
Feel Your Love.
It's
Tonight.
Called it's I'm the One, or Feel Your Love Tonight at the end, where they got the acapella part.
Yeah.
But there's a bridge in I'm the One, I think, where they do the acapella.
Yeah, they do the doo-wop-a, doo-wa-doo-wa-wa-wa.
That's right.
They were obviously influenced by stuff like that.
Nobody was doing that. Nobody was doing that back then. And that was just another thing about the band that I thought, well, that's really different. You can call up any one of the other great bands back then that were emerging. You know, nobody was doing crazy stuff like that. Just splitting into a middle of a song and doing a cappella. And then and then bam, into the ending.
Yeah.
And that, like you, Ashley said at the end of Feel Your Love Tonight, I can't wait, feel your love tonight. Done.
Can't wait.
Yeah, tonight, like a Broadway show, you know? Like, yeah. And I really hope they weren't auto-tuning or doing any sort of, like, you know,
I don't think they
fixing up had or that. Anything. No, auto-tune's been around for a long time. But it's one of those things that's like you hear, like, I was really into Avenged Sevenfold when their City of Evil album came out. And one of the things that they bragged about, because Avenged Sevenfold definitely adopted this from Van Halen. Like, listening to this, I was like, that's where they got it from. And I was a huge fan of Avenged Sevenfold. But one of the things, like, kind of one of their pat on the backs for themselves on City of Evil was that all of their harmonies were, like, actually recorded. Like, there was no auto-tune or any sort of like post-production done on any of the harmonies, and it makes it impressive. Like, it's something to brag about. So you hear it on an album like this, and it's just like, they are so, it's like four part harmonies or something. Like, I don't know how many people are singing. It's just, it stood out to me so much that I'm like, wow, I haven't heard this in rock music in a long time. And I was trying to think of, like, AC/DC wasn't doing this, Rush wasn't doing this. Like, I couldn't think of anyone else except, like you guys mentioned, like, doo-wop, and I thought Beach Boys. I'm just like, this sounds like a barbershop quartet at times.
Yeah. and if you listen to Sammy Hagar's version of Van Halen, they still have the same harmonies. And it wasn't David Lee Roth, by the way. And have you seen them, like, before Eddie passed away? Did you ever see them live? I can tell you that the harmonies were good. The bad part of Van Halen, especially in the later years, David Lee Roth didn't even pretend to hit those notes anymore. He would literally talk his way, like spoken voice, talk his way through some of those parts. But the backing vocals, Michael Anthony and Eddie, were still there. Yeah, they were still there. And again, that's why I'll give Michael a little bit of a pass. He's not Geddy Lee, you know, he's not John Entwistle. He's not, you know, the great bass players out there, but he was a good backing vocalist. He was solid on bass, you know, and I'll give him that. So I used to, like you, used to kind of go, oh, who's this guy? But
lucky to be there.
And then I heard other people talk about him, you know, that are in the business saying, no, wait a minute, you know.
I tried giving him his flowers when I was listening to it. You know, I was like, I didn't know that he was kind of like the head of kind of like creating those harmonies for them and everything. I didn't even know that. So I have even more respect for him now. But before I was thinking, I was like, well, he's very in the pocket. He might be playing super simple stuff, but man, him and that bass drum are just in sync. It's like, it made me think, it's not even on this record, but it made me think of Hot for Teacher. That intro,
yeah.
I'm just like, that's just like, that's how you know the rhythm section is just so like, they're so on point. They're so like cosmically connected.
And here's it about that song. And again, we're talking about the debut album, but I always wondered if that was like a real, like a double tracked, or here's what I heard about that too. In addition to that drum part going, Eddie is hitting his strings.
That's what I wouldn't have been surprised whenever Ash mentioned that Eddie kind of sounds like he approaches it from a drummer's perspective. Immediately I thought of Hot for Teacher. I was like, oh yeah, that intro.
Yeah.
It's like he's adding an extra little Tom hit, you know, like.
In another first that you mentioned Hot for Teacher as a video, and another first that I'll bring up that's actually legit because I've seen him play live and I've seen him play on different, you know, TV and things, YouTube and all that. He was the first guy who could play like he played with a smile on his face. Like he would walk around. He made it look so easy. Like that solo in Hot for Teacher where he's walking across the desk.
Yeah.
That's how he plays. That's just not fake.
Just like pure bliss. He's just like, ha, ha, ha. Just like
joy. Amazing. Pure joy of the pure guitar. Joy.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, he had some, you know, he had some struggles with addiction and things like that, that kind of made some, you know, like I've heard stories about him completely destroying concerts, but between on either side of that, just the guy, and I never understood how he could do it. Like, how can you, I had to look at my hands.
Yeah, no, and usually he's just like, guitar players do have to look at their hands when they're playing things like that.
I would be playing a simple 3-chord progression and be looking at my hands the whole time.
He just does it. He just knows where he's going.
So when this album, all of it. Yeah, I mean, it's just, it is so obviously, and I think his brother is the drummer, right? So, yep. And
Alex.
More than serviceable, for sure. Like, great drummer.
He's got great chops the whole
time. Yeah. Great drummer. Like I said, the rhythm section of this band is pretty hard to argue against. Yeah, you can't really break them apart at all. But it's like whenever, so this album came out, you heard it, it freaking drop kicked you off your bike. And then how has this album just been present in your life ever since? Like, was there ever, did they only get better from here? Or is this just a perfect album?
I think if you're going to look at what they typically call a desert island classic, like you can take an album on it. There's only a handful you could take with you and listen to forever. This would definitely be in my list of that. I think there really isn't, aside from, I'm going to say this, and you know, I apologize if this is your favorite song on the album, but it was a remake of an old blues song done by a guy named John Brim way back in the 50s, and that's Ice Cream Man. I'm not a huge fan of it. I think it's because it's such a David Lee Roth thing. I'm not really drawn. It's kind of gimmicky.
He plays the acoustic in the beginning.
Oh, he's playing?
Does he really?
Yeah. I only just learned that.
I actually really like that song. But if you're ranking them,
you know, it's 9 out of 10. Right? Yeah, I mean, it's... Right.
And it's...
Right?
I feel like it's so rare when we talk about like, yeah, that's my least favorite song on the album. And then you can still say, but it's still a great song, you know,
So throughout Van Halen's discography through 2 and 1985 and the next era of Van Halen, do you think they've been able to maintain their like influence? Do you think they dropped out at a certain point?
Were you ever blown away again by anything they did?
Yes. You know?
Okay.
Absolutely. And here's the thing. When you listen to, well, I should say this first. I'll set it up by saying, is there a complete album like their debut? No.
Okay.
But.
All right.
Their next record only had one hit, really. Dance the Night Away, I think, was like the biggest hit on Van Halen, too.
Yeah. But when you hear like some of the songs that Eddie's done on albums that are not Van Halen's debut album, they're just as amazing. There are songs that he's done, even with like Mean Streets is a good example. We talked about that earlier. That is a crazy, crazy, crazy good song. And the guitar playing in that album or that song is just as technical as anything that's on the debut. Panama, Hot for Teacher, House of Pain. That House of Pain on that is 1984 album is just as good. And you know,
wow, Mean Streets. Yeah, I mean,
there's like, there's spots, right? There's spots throughout the whole time. Even with Van Hagar, you know, I wasn't a huge fan of that because I'm old school and I came from, but I respect Sammy Hagar as a performer. They had some pretty good songs with that guy. You know, they had the only number one album they ever had.
I Can't Drive 55.
That actually came before he joined Van Halen. I didn't know that.
Oh, really?
That's one of the reasons he joined Van Halen, is because of that song.
I'm going to go back even further. Listen to Montrose.
Montrose.
That's Sammy Hagar. Yeah.
I got to put it on.
Listen to Montrose. There's a song I'm going to dial. I'm going to kind of look at it here.
I mean, you hear like the intro to House of Pain, and that does sound like almost like late 80s hardcore punk stuff, like Suicidal Tendencies almost type punk, like Circle Jerks type stuff. That was another thing that really stood out to me. You know, I was saying, like, you hear three decades of music after this, like listening to this album, even like Jamie's Crying, that swank, I'm like, that is like Alice in Chains Soundgarden style playing.
Very grungy.
Very grungy. And it's 1978.
Yeah. The little story behind that is Eddie was embarrassed to bring that song up to the band because he didn't like it very much. He thought it was okay. Yeah, it turns out to be one of the bigger hits off the album, but, you know, it just goes to show you that happens sometimes. By the way, that Montrose song is called Space Station Number 5. Give it a listen.
Okay.
It's pretty cool. For way back in the day when Sammy was a young lad, it's still rocking.
Before the Cabo Wabo.
Well before all of that. Like, you wouldn't recognize him, right? He was a skinny guy, teen, you know, had all his hair. You wouldn't recognize him. But he goes back really, really far. He's been around for a long, long time. But, you know, I mean, with Van Halen, you know, the cool thing about, and this is, I'm going to talk about this because of my age, but again, before YouTube, before MTV, before video, before any visual aspect aside from getting, you know, Parade magazine or Rolling Stone, was you waited for these albums to come out, and the cover of that album is super cool.
Oh,
of Van Halen's debut, right? I mean,
yeah, sure. It's a classic. Like, all the band members are on. They all got their quadrants in the corners.
That swipe of his, like the flame coming from his guitar, the time-lapse photography.
Yeah.
You know, and even like, it was just enough to be like, I can see a guy, but just not enough to go, what am I looking at? Like, these guys look pretty freaking cool.
Yeah, and I think they're all taken when they were performing live at Whiskey Go-Go.
Yeah,
so it's
cool.
Like, is there live photos of them just performing? Yeah. And it's super iconic. That logo is super iconic. Van Halen's just guitar is super iconic. The stripes and I always think of the red with the white stripes. Yep. Like, that is just like his, like, no one, you know, like you, it's weird to see. I'm a guitarist, but I don't really care that much about guitars. You know, like, I'm not big into like gear. I'm not a gearhead or anything. But that is just the most, that is the most recognizable guitar to me. If I could pick it out in a lineup, the second one would be Zakk Wylde's, like, black and white.
Oh yeah.
That's the only other one I feel like I could pick out of the lineup. Everything else is just kind of like anonymous, you know?
That and I think Prince's guitar. The
For sure.
That guitar.
For sure.
Others, but I'm sure, I don't know the story, but I'm sure he painted that guitar by himself, or the guitars by himself, with the tape and spray, probably a spray can, you know, back then. Didn't have a lot of technical ability.
It was 80s before the 80s. It was like that, that became the 80s aesthetic. Like, they were so ahead of the curve. What did Ash, like, you grew up with this album, I guess, right? Like, with your dad playing it all the time.
I mean,
did you like it right away, or was it something that had to grow on you? Like, were you dismissive of it like I was when I was a kid?
Again, it's really a blessing that we got you on, Dad, because there's often times when we listen to albums that we weren't around for, that we kind of miss out on the context and the importance. When I was listening to this album, I thought, wow, this is crazy. This is great stuff. But like, people like, I don't know, I'd heard people like Zakk Wylde and like Metallica, and I've heard shredding before. And it's like, to think that this is the origin, you don't really appreciate that when you're you know, like 6 years old in the early 2000s.
Yeah, your dad is prepping you to soccer practice, like jamming the You Really Got Me or something. And you're just like,
I was like, just another like 80s rock band, you know, just like all the others. But all the others were the people copying this album.
1,000%. Yeah, I never realized that.
And I would love if we could transition to our next segment of the show. Keep talking about the album. I do want to talk about the vocalist a little bit, but I think we'll do that through their next portions, which is the ratings that we gave the album from 0 to 10. Decimals are allowed and encouraged. As many decimal points as you want.
Sure.
I've abused that privilege many times.
Well, why don't you go ahead and start? Because I'm intrigued to hear what you would rank as your top on the album. You know mine, but I'll go over that later.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think this album is great. It still holds up, which is not very common for albums from this decade for me. The late 70s. Eddie's guitar work is still amazing. The rhythm section is holding it down. I personally very much love the vocals on this album.
Yeah.
Not just the backups, but also the lead. I love the iconic, like, high-pitched kind of squeal he can do. kind of thing. Incredible. I love that.
Yeah, it's funny, but it's great.
And the songwriting's great and catchy and rocking. And so that's gonna leave me to give this album... I think I'm going to give this album an 8.5.
Dang. That's fair.
That's fair. That's great. I think I never would have listened to this record had we not done it for this show. Never been a Van Halen fan. Never really cared. Always was dismissive of them. And never really got it, you know? And then listening to this, I'm like, I have a much better understanding of like how iconic and why these guys are this iconic, and how iconic this album is. And
hopefully throughout this episode, like kind of getting the perspective.
It was the reason why I wanted to have you on, Danny, was because the first time I listened to it, I was like, wait a second. I had no idea what I was getting into. I mean, out of the first four songs on this record, the first three are arguably some of the biggest rock songs of the last like 40 years. You know, it's insane. So when I listened to it once, immediately I texted Ash and I was like, dude, we have to have your dad on. I'm like, I need to understand. Because I was like, I have all of these feelings. Like I have all of these gut feelings. And I'm like, this had to have been such a huge thing when this came out. And I'm like, and it had to have been so surprising to so many people and completely like caught people off guard. I'm like, I needed to know your perspective, and it's been like so awesome hearing your history and like the origin of this album to you, because all you did was validate like everything that I was thinking going into this. Like after hearing it multiple times, I'm like, I went into this not a Van Halen fan, and I'm a Van Halen fan now. Like this album is incredible, and it's so fun. I feel like it's the first party rock record to really, you know, and, totally, and I feel like it's just being able to, I love going back to like the origin of something. It's like when I reread Lord of the Rings recently, and I was like, oh, all fantasy is just Lord of the Rings. And I was like, oh, all rock that came out after this album for like 15 years was just Van Halen. Everyone was just trying to do what they were doing. And it's so cool to like dig that up. And now I'm like, I'm going to listen to Van Halen too. I'm going to go all through their stuff until Sammy Hagar. And I might give the Sammy Hagar stuff a chance. I haven't decided yet. But
no pressure.
This was just so cool to go back to like the source. And and yeah, man, Eddie's playing, his tone is what really, really caught me off guard. I thought it was going to sound like shit, and it sounded fantastic. I was listening to the remastered version, but still, I'm sure when it came out, I'm sure it sounded so good on like nice stereo speakers, like but it sounded amazing. And I ended up like really enjoying this album. When Ash brought it up, I thought, I was like, well, I'm going to dunk on this thing for like 45 minutes straight. I did not think I was going to like this at all. And then after like waterboarding myself with it, which we have to do a little bit this show, listening to it 4, 5, 6 times, I was like, wait a second.
Sure.
This, there's a, like Van Halen has now, I have a whole newfound respect for them after listening to this album. And especially after hearing all of your background with it and understanding like what it really meant to the culture when it came out. And it's really, really impressive. So I thought I was going to give this like 5 stars just because Eddie's so good. You know, I was like, whatever, Eddie Van Halen, everyone loves him. Yeah, sure. This is going to be like a solid What'd you give it? 8.5?
An 8.5 from me.
I'm giving it 8.5.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh
nice. God.
Wow.
All right.
What a difference.
This isn't my cup of tea at all.
Why would we won you over?
Yeah, no, this album is just
but you can respect it, you know.
Exactly.
And you know, Ash knows this, but the songs that I'm, the albums, the artists, the songs that I'm drawn to are ones where you go back years later and you still hear something different.
Yeah.
That's intriguing to me. And believe it or not, there are parts in this album that I go back and go, I didn't hear that before. Or, you know, even some of their, if you want to explore their catalog, what I did is I just kind of hopped around a little bit. And there are songs that, like when I was on YouTube, somebody would bring up a song, a guitar player would say, hey, this is really crazy how he does this. And then I'll listen to that song and go, I didn't even know they did that. So
right.
They're one of those bands. He's one of those players. And this first album, it set the tone for it, where you go back and you listen to it. And I think that's why it's such a iconic, like the longevity's there. Because it's got stuff in it that you just like, if you wanted just to listen to the bass or the drummer, or you wanted just to listen to the little nuanced screams that David Lee Roth does, or you want to listen to turn that balance over and just listen to the rhythm guitar, you know, there's always stuff going on there that I think is really super deep. Now I'm going to grade this probably higher because of what it meant to me as a, you know, a fortune who literally didn't even know what a guitar was, to picking one up and buying one and taking guitar lessons and trying to learn music, not just Van Halen, but Eddie Van Halen was the reason. He and again, the Eagles, I had acoustic guitar and I love their songs, much simpler to play them, but
maybe a little bit,
4 or 5 chords in the truth, right? But I'm gonna give this probably I'm gonna say a 9.25, and the only reason why I'm not gonna give it a 10 for me is because I'm not a big fan of Ice Cream Man. I never have been, even when it first came out. I respect it. I understand it. It's like You Really Got Me. It's a cover, no problem. I do think over the years, to me, there were a few songs that were overplayed, which
certainly,
which again, in addition to in addition to being drawn into music that I can hear new things whenever I listen to it, I'm usually drawn into music that would qualify as a B-side over a hit. Like if you ask me what my favorite Rush song was, it's not Tom Sawyer, it's not In Limelight. It's a song that 99% of the people have never heard of, because you keep hearing it, or closer to the heart. No, keep hearing it, hearing it. So You Really Got Me, Ain't Talk About Love, Running With the Devil, which if you look at Spotify, those are 3 of their top 5 songs.
Yeah.
Are not my favorites on the album. Again, I gravitate toward I'm the One, Atomic Punk, On Fire, Eruption. You know, those are the ones that, and again, Eruption is one of those songs you hear a lot. You kind of do, but you kind of don't. Like if you're on YouTube at all and you look at guitar players, you see some 12-year-old who's ripping it.
Yeah, sure.
Right?
Fuck, Lucas pointing to himself.
That was definitely me, man.
Yeah, so
13, not even a Van Halen fan, but I'm playing at a Guitar Center every time.
But yeah, I mean, it was a super important album at a super important time, around this sort of atmosphere that just wasn't doing it for me. And it gave me, I guess, the bottom line is it gave me hope, right? That I can latch on to a genre now. Like, this is my thing.
Yeah.
You know, and then I started to learn about things like Old Blue Oyster Cult and Led Zeppelin's first 2 albums and things that I wasn't really exposed to because of this album. People would point out to me, oh, you like Van Halen? You gotta listen to AC/DC, man.
Yeah.
And I'm like, for sure. All right. So it just opened this whole world for me of music that has just become a love for me over the years.
it wouldn't be dramatic to say that like maybe this album kind of helped you find your identity a little bit with music.
Yeah, you know, for a lot of other reasons too. Like, you know, you have your groups of people that you hang around with, right? And, you know, I wasn't a cool kid. I wasn't a jock necessarily. I wasn't, you know, burnout. I was one of these guys who was in this sort of in-between nebulous gray area. And music like this started to pull people in to the circle I had. And then later on, not this album because I was only 14, but two or three years later, AC/DC, Back in Black. You couldn't go to a high school party without listening to, you couldn't hear, the album would play every time you walked into a party. And so that, to me, this set the stage for all of that.
Yeah.
It just did.
Yeah.
And it made it more accessible for people who weren't metalheads or rockheads or anything like that. It's like, this was a more universal packaging of like really good rock music.
I kind of feel like I'm a little bit like a calm sort of Jack Black who was just like, yes. And, but I'm not like as crazy as he is. I'm much calmer, I guess, but this music sort of has that inside of me, like, yes, you know, and every time I hear music like this, it could be a number of different bands. And, you know, it doesn't even have to be like screaming distortion, you know, driving, you know, bombardment of 16th notes and chirping guitar solos or anything like that. It could be something like, Brett's turned me on to, like Brett Late Social Hour, just something that's, or bands like I'm into the Pineapple Thief lately, or Death Cab, or, you know, those bands have something else to them. Again, there is this sort of thought behind what they do that started here, right? Mm-hmm. This has been sort of like the seed that made it happen. So,
and that's so exciting too, when you find a new band or new genre that opens you up to a whole new world of things to discover. Cause then it's like that really is, it's like, I feel like I have found my identity like six different times in my life.
Yeah. I was about to say you've gone through a good couple phases throughout your life.
Even since you've known me, I've gone through like multiple different phases of music, and they do shape, you know, my overall like self. Mm-hmm. And it is so exciting when you find that, especially like 14. That's why when you said you were 14 when this came out, I thought that is the perfect age to be when this album comes out. Like, you're just starting high school. You're like, who am I? You know, you might have like your group of buddies, but you're like, you know, like not really digging anything on the radio. Like, I guess I guess I'm into baseball or something. I don't know what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden this album comes out and you're just like, oh, okay. This is me now. Yeah.
Yeah. I bought my first guitar when I was, because of this, and again, the Eagles, but I bought my first guitar. I still have it. It was a Fender F-65. I was 15. Nice. So this is the reason I did that. Yeah. You know, I used to be okay. And I'm not trying to be modest. I'm being realistic. I used to be okay. Like, I could play songs on the guitar and I used to be all right. I'm not very good at it because I don't play anymore, but it still brought me, as a kid growing up in high school, this group of friends and an experience with those group of friends. Now, I never took it to the level that both of you took it, where you're playing live. And, you know, I did play basement garage parties and stuff, but we never took it live. And so I passed the torch to Ash, but to me, it was still a thing, right? Again, that was another aspect of my social existence that was born out of finding this album and then learning about more music and more music and more music. So again, it's like this whole tree of it, right? Yeah. I've gone through a lot of genres too, although I don't necessarily, and maybe I think it's just DNA, but I don't gravitate toward country or jazz so much. I respect them in certain ways, but I'm all about other stuff. I just can't get into those for some reason. I've tried. There are a few bands that I do like, but they still have to have, I think it's because they still have to have that hook, you know, that pull me back in.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, my dad had a similar experience where you hearing Van Halen made you want to pick up guitar. For my dad, it was Santana.
When he heard,
he heard Oye Como Va the first time, and he was like, I want to be Carlos Santana, and then he said he played guitar for 2 weeks and gave up because he got frustrated. And when I picked up guitar in sixth grade,
that's like me now.
Yeah, that's me now. When I picked up the guitar in sixth grade, he was so psyched because he was like, "Oh, I'm so," because I stuck with it for a long time, you know, and he was so supportive of it because he was like, "I never really did it. I always wanted to try and play music." And you came to, I remember you going to Mortalis shows, and I'm sure you've been to many, like, yeah, plenty of Burn Band shows and everything. And it's like, I love seeing that, you know, that support. And it sounds like it was similar to, like, me and my dad's relationship where, you know, it's just like, oh, he never played a show, or he never, you know, he didn't do as much with guitar as you did. But when I started doing it, he was like, yes, like, let me live a little bit vicariously
totally
through you.
Absolutely.
He would sing it on stage and be like, he's like, that looks like so much fun. You know, and I love
it's
that.
Even better. It's even better because when I was playing and I knew what it took, it was frustrating in a lot of ways for me because my mind knew what to do. My hands couldn't do it. But that's cool. I still had the experience. It's like, I still kind of mess around every now and then on it. And it's funny because as little as I had experience playing it, I could still pick it up and play it. Right. I mean, so it's never going to go away. Like if I wanted to entertain myself, that's okay.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's just, you know,
it is weirdly like riding a bike.
Kind of. Yeah. It's interesting how sometimes you pick it up and you're like, oh, I hate myself. And then other times you pick it up like, that's not so bad.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and that little tiny, it's like golf. Like if you can go out and play 18, hit 100 shots and suck, but that one shot keeps you coming back. Yeah. Sort of like that. It's like, oh, okay. Well, I'm not a complete waste of time, but it's living vicariously through your kids has been, in a lot of ways for me, so much better. So much better.
Yeah. You know? Well, yeah. You put in a lot of effort there, but in a totally different way.
Yeah. For probably the first 6 years I was playing music, either my mom or dad would drive me to every show. We would pack the drums in and go to Burn Band shows, go to Kick Butt Coffee, go to Red Hot Fly.
Bless you guys. It was like when I had a ska band in high school and my parents came to a lot of my shows and I'm just like, God bless you. I can't even imagine. My mom did the same thing. She drove me to all of my guitar lessons. You know, it was just I played flute for a couple years and in the school band, I played flute. And you had to get a certain amount of hours of practice every week or whatever. I never did it at home because I don't remember doing homework ever in my entire scholastic career, which is not a good thing. But I definitely didn't want to practice flute when I was, you know, I'd want to play Grand Theft Auto. So my mom would go with me to the rehearsal rooms at our middle school at like 6 a.m. so I could rehearse for like an hour and a half before school, like two, three days a week. So yeah, it's those things, man. It's like those like people remember that stuff, you know?
Yeah.
But the payoff is that all of those trips and all of that sitting in the room with Ash and Dave learning how to play is you hear bump, bump, bump. And before you know it, you're at Come and Take It Live and people are screaming down at the drummer, you know, I mean, that's the payoff. Right. And it's nice to see the hard work. Let's just face it. It's not easy to do what y'all do when you're live, Mortalis or otherwise, right? I mean, you guys got to practice. It's not like you just get up there and go, oh, let's go ahead and it's not a free form jazz festival. Let's go ahead. We need to practice. And these songs are intricate. They're long. And that wasn't lost on me. And I think it's because of the fact that I did for a brief shining moment do that. And the music that I listened to is sophisticated. I think that's one reasons I'm not sort of geared toward country. It's, you know, three chords about beer, women, trucks, and dogs.
The worst of it, sir. The party country is kind of hard to get into.
I do like the Hunter Brothers, and I do like some bands that have a lot. There are some country bands out there that have talent. I'd say there isn't out there, but for the most part, you all know that's the reason why I gravitated toward the bands that are, again, you go back and back and back again listening to, because like Van Halen and going back to this album, recently has been like, yeah, it's, I can still feel like that excitement that I did when I first listened to it.
Speaking of which, I'd like to kind of transition to our last little segment here where we talk about our two favorite songs, as well as if you have any like honorable mentions, the Narnorables, we call them here.
Yeah, I think also it might go without saying that maybe every song is an honorable mention for everyone.
Yeah. So yeah, you can make a case.
Except for maybe Ice Cream Man for you.
Right. I would say my two least favorite are Atomic Punk, which I think is one of your favorites, right, Danny? As one of your favorites, Fish?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and say it's one of my favorites. It's one of my Narnugs.
I just kind of, I'll get my gripes out of the way, and you guys can tell me why you love it so much. It felt a little out of place for me, and it was a little
fair,
but it felt like their attempt of a Led Zeppelin type fantasy rock song.
Yeah,
I mean it does have that punk momentum throughout the whole thing with that driving guitar.
And I was disappointed the first time I heard it. I was like, ooh, is this going to be punk? And then it wasn't. And I was like, oh, it's kind of like Led Zeppelin. I'm like, it just never grew on me.
I still love that driving feel throughout it. It just sounds like it's chaotic and all over the place, but it's still focused. No one could rule these streets at night but me. I've had that tom rhythm, the but that's just been stuck in my head for the last like week, and I've been like tapping it on people and they're like, hey, you gotta like stop doing that. It's like, oh, sorry, it's stuck in my head.
Yeah, I agree. I think you said it, but chaotic is a great word for it. It's controlled chaos.
Yeah,
and I think it, again, just because of me being so impressionable as a 14-year-old and diving into this album, when I heard that set of triplets, those harmonics dive into that 2:11 into the song, I just went, what did I just hear? What was that? And I had to rewind. So that made an impression on me. And I think that's the reason why I'd put it up there. I mean, and by the way, the caveat would be, maybe it's not so much 1, 2, or 3 or 1, 1A, 1B, 1C. I mean, because hard, like, talk to me tomorrow and I'll tell you that my favorite one would be On Fire. Right. In the beginning, like 12 seconds into On Fire, he has this chirping back and forth sound. And I learned, again, like Atomic Punk, that it's this toggle switch on the guitar.
Another Tom Morello thing.
Right. Yep. Another Tom Morello thing. And so, again, we didn't have YouTube or anything like that. So when I found out how he did it, I tried for the longest damn time to make that same sound and I couldn't do it. But then it occurred to me when I listened to the album as a total that the dude just uses every part of the guitar. Like he just, it's a part of it.
Yeah.
And so those harmonics, that epic way of playing, I think I would list that as my number 2-ish, 3 maybe. And I'm the One, because there's so many different, there are at least 8 different riffs in I'm the One. Like if you listen to it, that could be songs by themselves.
Yeah. Right. Yeah,
they just expanded on it for sure. And I love the cool, like the rhythm section, like kind of horse trot kind of rhythm.
Yeah. And the first in not a lot of cases of people using the double kick in this way of like the that's kind of present in Hot for Teacher as well.
Yeah.
That Alex utilizes. And that being my second Narnug, by the way.
Oh.
If we're going to talk about it anyway, might as well say, but. Yeah, love the riffs. Another great pounding energy, momentum throughout the whole thing. I love the backup vocals especially. I'm the one you love and fame have enough. You know.
Yeah. It's a weird progression. It's weird. It is like all of a sudden a barbershop-y type melody and composition, and it goes right back to like proto-thrash. Could we call it a little bit?
Proto-proto-thrash.
Proto-proto-thrash. Man, and we mentioned On Fire, too. That is, like, a legit pretty heavy song.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
Like, I was surprised to hear such a heavy song on this album.
It's one of the heavier ones, for sure. Absolutely. and it's one of my favorites on his top five.
Awesome chorus.
Ain't Talking About Love is good. He does a scale on Ain't Talk About Love up the neck. That is a, if you can cop that, you probably can do any scale you want.
no, that and, mention, Ain't Talking About Love is one of my favorite songs on the record.
Really?
Oh, cool.
Yes.
Yeah.
That weirdly, that as a non Van Halen, I'm a non Halen fan when I was a kid, this was always my favorite Van Halen song. For some reason, mm-hmm. when I was growing up, I love the guitar riff. I love that riff.
I love how the chorus comes in and he kind of like, bah, 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 just like
yeah.
really staccatos the notes and then lets it hang out. I think it's cool.
Yeah. It sounds energy. Like it could have been a Judas Priest song. Like if Judas Priest could write this song, I feel like it's it would be a slightly different. Like execution of it, and like this sounds like the same type of genre, like under the same umbrella. And but it has, you already mentioned Blue Oyster Cult too, and I thought that I couldn't quantify it or qualify it exactly. It has something to do with the production on it, Talk About Love, but it kind of sounds like Don't Fear the Reaper to me, like the same type of production.
Yeah.
Not what do y'all think? You know, the melody or the sound or anything, but it was like the production sounded like it. And the solo is so weird for a Van Halen solo that it almost sounds like something like The Cure would have or something. Really
very good call. Well, we talked about a little bit of the acapella at the end of Feel Your Love Tonight, but what I love about that song is that crunchy sound at the beginning, those meaty chords, which I always loved, you know. Bow, bow, bow. Bow, 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 da, da, da,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And that like love the main riff.
Crying.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, Jamie's Crying like legit sounds like I'm the man in the box. That's what it sounds like to me.
Somebody asked me one time, girl, I think a long time ago, it was a girl I was dating, was like, "Why do you like playing the guitar?" I'm like, "Okay, have you ever held an electric guitar? Stand in front of a loud amp and hit an E chord?
Obviously not.
It will change your world. That Feel Your Love Tonight, that crunchy, heavy, deep tone, you could feel it. You could feel the guitar vibrate.
Yeah.
That's my second favorite song on the record.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about that a little bit.
I think it's just such a fun song about desperately wanting to have sex with a girl from your neighborhood.
Right,
it's such a fun song. I love the line, "Better use it before it gets old," is so crazy. Song, it's amazing, and but it also it's super fun, and it's just like a super fun, catchy song. It's like definition of party rock to me.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the similarities with "Feel Your Love Tonight" and "Dance the Night Away," which is my favorite Van Halen song. This one sounds so similar to Dance the Night Away that I'm like, I just put them both. Like, they're both now my favorite Van Halen.
Nice.
Yeah, and actually, the first time I heard Dance the Night Away was a ska cover of Dance the Night Away.
Oh.
And I was like, this song is awesome. Who is this?
That's interesting.
Yeah, because it didn't sound like any of their other songs. And I was like, who is this? What is this? And I looked it up. I'm like, oh, this is a Van Halen song originally. Like, new favorite.
Very cool.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's about it. I thank you so much for coming on, Dad. It was really nice.
My pleasure.
To have you talk about all these little factoids and stories and your perspectives. And it wouldn't be the same episode without it.
Well, thanks. I totally was stoked when you asked me. I'm like, I listen to your podcast. I think it's a lot of fun. You guys obviously know a lot about music, so I thought, well, if I could add a little flavor from at least my perspective of being somebody who was around at that age when it came out, and how important it was, not just to me, but to the crowd I grew up around, the people who are my age at that time, and how throughout the years, if I called my buddies up that I went to high school with and asked them if they still listen to this album, 100% of them would say yes. It's stood the age of time, the test of time. Yeah. Good albums do that. You keep going back and listening to it. And, you know, we could probably spend another hour and a half talking about how many people this thing has influenced. So, tons of fun, man. Tons of fun. I never get tired of talking about this kind of stuff because it's good. It's just good.
Yes. Yeah, it's easy to talk about good music. It's some of our shorter episodes are the albums that we hated, and they're like 35 minutes long. We're like, whatever, we got through it. But I totally agree with Ash. Like, so glad that you joined us, Danny, and you absolutely made this episode. And it was so cool hearing your stories and your history with this album and the impact it made on you. And it's like, it's you have created a new Van Halen fan. So
nice. Go. You have to listen to a few of their other songs that are deeper cuts that mean of like, because there's some really fantastic stuff they've done out there, especially Eddie's work. And even, you know, there are a few Van Hagar songs out there that I think are worth it. Besides stuff, not the main stuff really so much, but you know, like Eddie, when you're that talented, it's hard to hide it. So
for sure. It's hard to be like mediocre or simple, I think, especially when people who are just, like,
he never mailed it in.
No, right?
Never. Yeah.
No, I think this is definitely next time I drink, I'm putting on a Van Halen record for sure.
Do it.
Yeah. And I gotta say, man,
like, I think I
oh Ash. Oh well, I was no. No.
No. You go ahead and let me go first.
Just okay. Shut up real quick. I was gonna say something.
Okay. All right. Yeah, all right. Okay.
I wanted to say that another really cool reason having you on, Danny, was because, I mean, we've been doing this show for 3 years almost at this point, I think. And you have come up so many times in shows and episodes where it's like, you clearly, like, you raised Ash right. Like, there's so much music that you exposed her to, and she, and music that she still, like, carries with herself to this day, you know? And, like, these things come up as we record these episodes. So it's like cool to like dive into like y'all's, you know, like family history too. And just, and you know, kind of get some more insight into like who Ash is from talking with you. This is the longest I've ever talked to you, you know? So it was a pleasure.
I know. Usually you guys are gigging out and doing busy work, but just, I'm amazed that Ash's just knowledge and vast, you know, it's funny to say that you learn from your kid what good music is, and I have. It's not the other way around. And it's you know, just why, like 21 Pilots, I could name, you know, that. I mentioned a few of others before. I got an album, you know, a playlist that I listen to all the time that has your music on it. And it's just so, especially like your podcast, like anybody who's just listening to earbuds right now, listen to the past episodes, because you're going to learn about music, and that's what it's all about. You know, if I dialed up the playlist that you had, I'm looking at Strong Drunk Hands, Brainstorm, Black Snow, Favorite Worst Nightmare. Just all these bands, you know, Lush, Superchunk, Mr. T, Experience, Pendulum. I could go on and on about the music I would have never been exposed to if it weren't for the relationship we have.
And we didn't even have to pay him that much for that endorsement.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Plug?
I'm good.
A hand or hand bump after this episode.
All right.
And I think I speak for both of us when I say that we'd love to have you on again. Maybe you could like bring in your own album that you would like to talk about.
There are some, you know, new ones, and I'm a bit of a laggard when it comes to y'all, when it comes to new music, but every now and then I'll stumble across something that piques my interest. And usually what happens is y'all are the same way, but when I find something, I listen to it ad nauseum until I almost can't listen to it anymore, and then I'll leave it alone and I'll go back to it. So I do that in chunks of new music, right? I don't spread myself as thin as I probably, but you know, I'd love to. Just let me know.
Awesome. Yeah,
absolutely. And with that said, thanks so much, listeners, for listening to this episode. Let us know what you guys think of Van Halen by Van Halen. Were you dismissive like me? Were you ignorant and uneducated like me before this album? Let us know what you guys thought. Or were you educated like Ash, thanks to Danny? Raise right. My dad had me listening to freaking Madonna and Michael Jackson. It's really cool. But Let us know what you guys thought of this record. Let us know what you guys think of this show. Leave us a rating, a review. Check us out on YouTube if you want to watch the video version of this. We're on every podcast platform. Recommend it to your friends. And yeah, man, I don't know. Oh, I know what album we're talking about in the next episode.
Yeah, I do too. we've had this album on our to-do list for 3 weeks now, almost a month.
Yes, I got.
Do we get a sneak peek, or do we need to tune in?
We always kind of give a little. We always give the little Easter egg away at the end of the episode. Right. I was very sick last week, so that's why we had to reschedule. So I appreciate that as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we are going to be listening to one of my favorite indie rock albums by a band called Maps and Atlases. The album is called Be Aware and Be Grateful. Super excited to talk about this. Ash, I don't think you ever had listened to them before.
No, this is the first I've dove into them. And well, you'll have to tune into the episode to see exactly my thoughts on it.
Right. But that's not a good time.
I'll give one of these at the moment.
Oh, all right, then. All right.
That's good.
No K emojis.
Maybe one of these will pop up. You know, but you got to tune in.
All right. Well, cliffhanger. Let's leave people there.
Right.
Danny, thanks.
Hey, thanks, guys. Thank you. I'll make sure I tell people to tune in. We'll see what happens.
Yes.
Awesome.
Let's get that ad revenue. All right. Ash, this was good.
Lucas, this was good.
Bye, buddy. Bye. 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 Good night. We'll see you.